right, let's call the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association Board of Retirement Meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Courtney Ford.
Here.
Maria Deanna.
Here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Jeff Grover. Mike Lynch.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Michael O'Neill. Joan Clendenon.
Here.
We have a forum.
All right, announcements.
I have, you want to go first?
Okay, I would like to let you know that we do have a change in a date on Agenda Item 5F1, which is the Service-Connected Disability Retirement for Mr. Rom. His effective date should be August 12th, 2012, not August 13th, 2012. Our recommendation for this item has not changed. We do recommend that the board approve Mr. Rom's application for service-connected disability with the corrected date of August 12th, 2012. We would also like to point out that the changes recently requested by Trustee Clendenon have been included and incorporated into the disability write-ups that you received in the packet for the agenda for this month.
And I thank you.
You're very welcome.
I noticed it.
Excellent.
Good.
I have a couple items. First of all, Trustee Riley requested that you wanted to find out what the amount was in that downgrade of SLM.
Mm-hmm.
That amount actually was about 3% of the SLM portfolio, which was about $5.5 million, so that amounted to about $160,000 loss.
Wow.
But come to find out, Dodge & Cox didn't actually sell that part of the portfolio to get back into compliance. They sold some other issues that were below investment grade. So we still have the entire number of securities that were there before are still there now.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I wanted to say was what I just told Joan, that Joan will be voting today since Michael O'Neill's out.
Okay. All right, moving on to item 4, I do see members of the public here, so I'll read the public comment advisement. Matters under jurisdiction of the board may be addressed by the general public before or during the regular agenda. However, California law prohibits the board from taking action on any matter which is not on the posted agenda unless it is determined an emergency by the Board of Retirement. Any member of the public wishing to address the board during the public comment period shall be permitted to be heard once up to 3 minutes. Please complete a public comment form and give it to the chair of the board. Any person wishing to make a presentation to the board must submit the presentation in written form with copies furnished to all board members. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes. Do we have any public comment? All right, seeing none, moving
question.
On. Yes.
Is that a new disclaimer?
I only make that advisement when I see members of the public here. If not,
okay.
I usually pass it over. All right, moving on to item 5, consent items. With the change to item 5F1, with the effective date now being August the 12th of 2012, as stated by Don Lee, do I have a motion from the floor to approve the consent items as listed with the change?
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve with a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Moving on now to item 6, SIS monthly performance review for the month ending June 30th, 2013.
Thank you. When you go over the monthly report, this is an important month because it's the last month of fiscal year. And as I stated in the past, the prior two fiscal years were good up to the last quarter, and then we had a nice sell-off in fiscal year 2011-2012. We did have some volatility return to the markets in May and June this year, predominantly with real interest rates spiking up, with the 10-year going from 1.7% to 2.7% inter-month of June, which adversely affected fixed income. But all in all, May and June were slightly down, but not down significantly. And you can see on the first page A that for the month, the Russell 3000 was down 1.3%. Non-U.S. equities continue to lag. with the All Country World Ex-US down 4.3%, and emerging markets continue to be weak, down 6.3% for the month. For the one-year period, which coincides with the fiscal year for Stan Serra, the U.S. equities as measured by the Russell 3000 up 21.5%, non-U.S. up 14.1%, although emerging markets were up just by 3%. And fixed income, this is very important because we've had two education sessions on fixed income with the third coming today. You can see the one-year return for the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index minus 0.69%. We kind of been expecting this to happen for some time, that given where yields were on a historic basis, making all-time lows, that at some time they would bottom out, and we would have spikes up occasionally, which we saw May and June. And you can see June, the aggregate was down 1.5%. Spread products were especially affected, with high yield down 2.6 and emerging market bonds down 5. And the one-year number, as I said, for the aggregate was slightly down. So that's something we're going to, again, talk about in this third education session today. Page one, the plan ended with $1.54 billion market value at the end of June. Everything is within ranges and fairly close to targets. Domestic equities are above target with a strong run there. International slightly below, but within range. And direct lending with the first two capital calls for Raven and Mendley at 2% of assets. We did close on White Oak and received their first capital call coming up shortly. So they will be added to the mix. Page two, changes in allocation. It was a down month, down $29 million from the prior month, but up $162 million from the prior year, change of 11.75%. And that obviously includes all the monthly retirement payments that go out also at roughly $3 million a month. Page three, percent of each of the managers to targets. The U.S. equity managers tend to be slightly above targets with the run-up. All in all, everything looks fine there. And page four, cash levels are low at the equity manager level. The fixed income managers are holding above average cash positions, which is a good strategy in rising rates, actually. It helps protect them a bit and controls duration, which is a important factor in a fixed income portfolio. Page five is going to be the performance review. One update on Raven. They had their final close this past summer with about $150 million in commitments. So that fund is closed, which we're obviously part of. Okay, performance. Performance was very, very, very good for fiscal year 2013 on both an absolute and relative basis. The fiscal year 2013, we're looking at a 14.6% return for the Stan Serra portfolio versus 11.53% for policy index, alpha of roughly 300 basis points. And I can't stress how good this relative return, alpha, excess return of 300 basis points is, given that all of our assets are in public markets. Given that a good part of our portfolio is passive in equities, we have four passive managers, the S&P 500 with BNY Mellon, BlackRock on the 1,000 growth, 1,000 value, and the REIT securities. We have eight active managers in total. All eight outperform. That is not typical either. And six of those eight outperformed by outsized margins. And it's rewarding to see. It's helpful, obviously, to the plan. We'll be dropping a bad year off of the five-year smoothing and adding this year to it, so we should see a nice change once that comes out. But obviously, we want to temper expectations that not to expect this every year.
If they all performed in the same direction, every outperformed in every way, is there, in your opinion, some general bias they have toward an upmarket or toward something that we should be aware of as exposure?
That's a great question. Our experience had been up to this fiscal year that our active managers tended to do better in up markets than down markets. And that's not atypical, but we've had a very good fiscal year on equity markets, at least a very good up market. So that helped. I think what we saw this past year was finally a break in the inter-high correlation of stocks moving up and down together. In other words, prior to about 9 months ago, when stocks went up, almost every stock went up in a similar fashion, and vice versa. When they went down, they all went down. About 9 months ago, there was a break with stocks reacting more to earnings and their own stories than the general macro conditions, and some stocks did better than others in this upmarket. And as active managers, if you're a skilled active manager, I mean, it's your job to identify and pick those stocks moving up versus those moving down. So at least in the short period, there was an opportunity for stock pickers to add value, but that's based upon the ability of each of those managers to do that type of job. And they all did that job this year. So, and the other question is, if they all move up this much together, can they all move down this, you know? I mean, there's upside capture, and there can, and that's something we'll be watching. But as I said, we have a lot of our portfolio in passive, so that protects us somewhat. And I would state that I think we've done a decent job of putting together a roster of active managers alongside those passives. So it's rewarding, but one wants to make sure that this outperformance can't be repeated on the downside. Fixed income also did well. Dodge & Cox and PIMCO, especially Dodge & Cox with their corporate overweights, added 328 basis points. On equities, Dodge & Cox, you can see, added 473 basis points for the fiscal year. So they came on strong and had a very, very good year along with Capital Prospects. And Legato is really starting to outperform. They've been kind of benchmark-like, but the last 2 months were quite strong, which made up a good part of that fiscal year 325 basis points of outperformance. International equity, both managers had very good years also. LSV on the value side and Pyramus on the growth side. So combined, it was a very good year, 14.6%, and very strong alpha. And that alpha of 307 basis points is produced with annual fees running about 30 basis points. We have very low fees overall, part of that due to our passive components. So our net performance, subtracting the 30 basis points of annual fees, is still very strong at about 275 basis points. And you can see now for the fiscal year to date equals the full 12-month period of our assumed 8% actuary rate and 3.5% inflation. The rest are the rolling three-year periods, page six, Dodge & Cox equity, that spike up now and with their solid fiscal year 2013. Delaware started to be lagging a little bit the last couple months, but still producing 2% three-year rolling alpha, Capital Prospects above 2%, Legato showing improvement now, 3 years at 50 basis points, with the strong fiscal year 2013. LSV at 50 basis points. Page 11, Pyramus, very strong, trending up to 2%. and Dodge & Cox fixed income around a 1.5 on the rolling 3 years. So it was a very good year. July has started out very, very good also for fiscal year 20, dare I say, 14. And we'll show that when we get to the top 10. But I'll take any questions on the performance. And I think Gordon a while back asked the question, how do we measure you, Paul, the consultant, or just the consultant in general? And I think my response was three ways, from negotiations on management or fees, just how I perform for the board and the staff on a continuous basis, and three, how our fund performs versus policy index, especially that. And I'm not going to take credit for that, but because I work on behalf of the board and the staff, but I think together it's a very nice result, and I'll smile for a day until we get to 2014 fiscal year.
All right. No further questions for Paul. We'll move on to item 6B, report on the top 10 holdings.
Okay, top 10 holdings. Moving to fiscal year 2014, with the top 10 holdings of managers through July 16th, so that was through 1 week ago. And you can see the changes in the benchmarks below. The Russell 1000 growth for BlackRock passive large cap growth was up 4.9% through a week ago, and I think the market's been up 17 in the last 20 days or something like that. So it's even going to be stronger than that today. And you can see most of the gains in the Russell 1000 growth are outside the top 10 positions, because positions 3 to 10 are all negative on the passive side. Next is the large cap value for BlackRock index fund. Russell 1000 value up 4.16 through July 16th there. Nothing out of the ordinary in the top 10 relative changes. Capital prospects are small cap values. Russell 2000 value up 6.17%.
You noticed they must have got rid of Gulfport Energy.
Yes, that's right. At least one of the three managers did not get out of the top 10.
It's up to like $50.
Yeah. Maybe they sold it from evaluation, yeah. Four decent gains in the top 10 there for cap prospects. Delaware, large cap growth active manager, 5 of the 10 up, 5 down, but strong returns in EOG Resources, energy stock, and Celgene of biotech up 10.5 relative change. I think there was a event with them on a buyout or something. Dodge & Cox equity, 5 of the 10 top 10 are up, but it's their 5 top positions up, so that's good. Legato, Russell 2000 growth up almost 7% through July 16th on a monthly basis. And as I said, those numbers are higher today. Although only two of the top 10 were up for Legato in this strong up market. S&P 500 up 4.36%. And the two international managers, LSV and Pyramus, the Acquiex US is also having a strong month, up 4.4%, with LSV showing gains in four of their positions, and Pyramus in four of their positions also. So if we can hold these gains the last week of the month, last few days, we're going to have a very strong month to start fiscal year 2014. That said, it's very unusual to see markets up 17 out of 20 trading days, and we're definitely feels like we're getting stretched, especially in small cap stocks in the U.S. So we're overdue for a correction. We did have a 4%, 5%, 6% correction in that May, early June period. I would not be shocked to see another one similar to that, but I don't think it'll be much more than that, because A, stocks don't seem to want to go down, and B, relative to other asset classes, particularly bonds, there's still a nice equity premium in the market. I will stop for any questions on that before we transition to fixed income.
Any questions for Paul? Okay.
Better.
Thank you.
I'll turn down my hearing.
Might want to turn it off after a patient. Oh, this. Sorry. There we go. Okay. This is part three of three. This will be the last day of torture on the fixed income manager structure. I'm just going to review a little bit of the first two sessions, the key points, and then we'll go to session three. And this won't be long either like the other two. Session one, I think this wasn't important. I told you what the one-year return on the Barclays Capital Aggregate is, which is the benchmark for our two managers, Dodge & Cox and PIMCO. And the roles of fixed income in the portfolio, primarily capital preservation, income generation. Liquidity is definitely another part of a fixed income portfolio, especially when you get heavy into illiquid assets, although we're not close to being that. Even with our direct lending 7% target there, that's not going to be an issue. Fixed income has been challenged in these areas, as evidenced by the negative return for the aggregate over 12 months. We've seen May, June as potentially a precursor to the future with yield spiking up. It was a little bit atypical in that yield spiked up. It was all real yields spiking up. Inflation hasn't come to the surface yet, and economic growth remains somewhat muted. So that's when we had our offsite in Oakdale, and I stated I think we were close to a top of yields when the 10-year was around 270 that day. It's back down around 248 today, but clearly there are shocks to the system in the future that could cause yields to spike up like they did May and June, which would adversely affect a fixed income portfolio. Session two, we talked about our existing portfolio. We have Dodge and Cox and PIMCO. As I said, these are kind of summaries of each of the two on page 17. And you can see the current yield, Dodge & Cox at 4.4 and PIMCO at 2.3, combines for a 4% yielding portfolio. Assuming no price appreciation, we have 30% of our portfolio roughly yielding returning 4%, which means we need the other 70% to give us kind of low double digits to achieve our actuary assume rate. So that's another challenge that we face. And yields are low, and if yields increase, it's going to be very difficult to achieve that type of return because bonds will start returning potentially zero to negative values. This is always the page that scares my clients the most today, and that is achieving our total return given where cash levels are. All asset classes are priced off of cash, and in the past, that top line from 1970 to the end of to January 2013, the average risk-free rate or cash rate was at 5.7%, and beta from the mixes of assets were 4.2%. So you were returning 9.8% roughly. Today we have our SIS has a 1.5% expected cash fee rate. which is not today's current rate, but looking out 2 to 3 market cycles over the next 10 years. Cash today is 0 to 25 basis points. Over time, we would expect that to increase, where the average over the 7 to 10-year period will be 1.5% for cash. And our beta is a little higher because equities have a nice risk premium attached to them over bonds and cash of 5.5%. So we're forecasting a 7% return, which is fine if we can produce 3% alpha every year like we just did, but that clearly is not expected or guaranteed. And the risk-free rate today, as I said, was around 20 basis points.
What would those numbers look like if you only looked at the last 10 years?
I think it would look more like a risk-free rate of 1.5-2%
plus 5.5.
Around 5%. So it would be close to that 7% forecast the last 10 years. Yes, that's a good question. Here's our reminder where we're at. We have a 7% expected return, which is exactly that forecast in the middle. I don't know if that's coincident or not, probably not, with a real return of 4.7% given inflation of 2.3%. And that fix is right about 30% in our new policy mix. As we continue to fund direct lending and get into real estate and the infrastructure manager structures, we'll draw down the assets in fixed income and equities to fund those.
Does the real estate include, that's just investment the managers make. It has nothing to do with the Raymond James thing.
No. Correct.
Yes. Okay. I'm going the wrong way. Can we break down? Okay. So this session, we're starting on page 22. So we know the concerns. We've seen the past 1 year history. We see the challenges with cash price so low. So what can we do about it? And these are different things to consider, not necessarily to implement, but at least to consider. One is duration, reduced duration. If you are a firm believer that interest rates are going to go up and potentially go up sharply in short periods, one can reduce the portfolio's duration, which is a measure of sensitivity to interest rates. Our duration with Dodge and Cox and PIMCO is 4.25 years. So if bonds go up 1%, which they recently did, based on the 10-year, they went from 1.7 to 2.7, we would expect our bond portfolio to lose 4.25%, all else being equal. We did not lose that much, by the way, in May, June, because of our active management. And Dodge & Cox has a slightly below duration in their portfolio. And some of their corporate bonds helped actually protected us in that environment. So if rates go from, in the next 3 years, from current levels up 1%, that's the challenge. Now, the good news is that as rates go up over time, your yield of your portfolio will go up also on a lag basis as bonds mature and you reinvest into new fixed income instruments at higher yield. So there is some of that going on also. We can diversify across sources of yield and risk. Right now, we have just two managers. And originally, we just had Dodge and Cox fixed income. And they are a very, very, very good fixed income manager. They've added value over long periods of time. They tend to add value by being overweight spread products, corporates, and mortgages, and underweight treasuries. And through their research and fixed income selection, they add value. PIMCO has become a good diversifier to them. They're more taking on macro calls. They do have a decent treasury sector component in their portfolio, kind of to offset Dodge and Cox's underweight. And they do have low correlation to one another on excess returns. But that said, there's a lot of other fixed income instruments out there for consideration that we're really either not involved in or very low weightings to. Bank loans are one. Bank loans are also called floating rate notes. So as yield, as interest rates go up, the yields on the bank loans correspondingly go up with the yields in the marketplace. They have that written into their covenants. And they give you downside protection given their senior position. Their various credit opportunity strategies. The due diligence committee visited PIMCO this past month. We spent a whole morning talking about other type of strategies they run that might protect us better in a rising rate environment. And that involved various credit opportunity strategies and the ability for PIMCO to control their duration in a much broader way than they do now, tied to the aggregate index.
So they're planning on inflation.
I think everyone's planning on inflation down the road. The question is more when than if. And there's geographic diversification with emerging markets. EM debt has grown in size, and almost half of the emerging market debt universe is now investment grade. So that would fit in our guidelines. Again, this is just education and things to consider, by no means to implement in our portfolio. You can see this is a kind of familiar chart. There's one done with different asset classes. This is done with sectors within the fixed income marketplace on page 24. And the only thing I take away from this is, different bonds lead the top at different points in the cycle. And it's hard to guess often which will be the leader in the next year and which will be the worst. But displacements in the market like May and June are often welcomed by active managers. Although it can impact their short-term performance, it does create relative value opportunities in these spread products that can become new additions to their portfolio. Emerging market debt's been hit very hard, along with emerging market equities. Remember, the relative one-year performance emerging market equities was 3% versus 20% for U.S. equities. That creates opportunities in the marketplace that active managers will react to. And that's a way to add value over time. Okay, this is on credit and high yield bonds. You can see high yield performance and rising rates versus core bonds and treasuries. Generally, when rates are rising, it means the economy's improving. And when the economy's improving, high yield bonds, which are corporates, tend to act well. Again, that is something not written in our guidelines at the moment. Although managers can hold below investment grade bonds in their portfolios that have been downgraded up to a certain percent. Again, high yield, these are yield advantages. Obviously, greater risk equals greater yield, but it does equal the greater risk, and we recognize that. Bank loans, again, bank loans are at 4.8% yield. Bank loans are also below investment grade, although they're senior to high yield instruments in the capital structure.
So BB is junk bonds, right?
Triple B is investment grade, double B is junk, yes. That's the yes.
Double B is?
Junk, high junk. Yield. Yeah, low investment grade.
Is there a correlation between bank loans and the direct lending asset class that you've chosen to fund?
Yeah, there it is. Bank loans have liquidity, responsibility to trade on and the active measures involved in it. So, again, it'll put you pretty much the tractive and more the vehicle, the directed lending vehicles. Mm.
Okay. Where there are opportunities are also in mortgages and in the CMBS sector. One group that we had in here a few years ago was Prima Capital. They have a fund and a very good performance record. The nice thing is this portfolio is all investment grade quality. The manager is as conservative as you can find out there, with a yield advantage today in the marketplace. So their portfolio is in the 4 to 4.5% range, and they expect their portfolio to return 7 to 8% on an annual basis as currently constructed. It would be a nice alternative and a lower correlation to the two managers we have. And this is one of two things we would like to propose to the board for an education session would be for them to come back and present their investment grade CMBS portfolio again.
Is this a fixed income investment, or does it have some trappings of both fixed income and real estate? Where would it fit?
It's fixed income for sure. They're fixed income instruments. The beauty about this group is their size. They're small enough where the big firms buy CMBS securitized pools of a number of underlying real estate properties in that pool. These buy just CMBS securities on one underlying asset or just a handful, where they go out and visit each of the underlying properties and really do a due diligence beyond what you can do on a large securitized pool.
Where are they headquartered?
They're in Westchester, New York.
And are there other 37 Act counties that have
San Joaquin has.
Pardon me?
One of my other counties, San Joaquin, has been an investor for probably 5, 6, 7 years now.
And they're doing okay?
They're doing very well, yes.
Are these second mortgages?
I believe they're first mortgages, but that would be a question to ask.
Wait a minute. We don't want to get into the second mortgage business at all, do we?
No.
And that's
no.
Really
no.
Scale.
Right. But they are first mortgages, I believe. I will double check. I'm going to skip this. Here's the EM debt story. Again, EM debt is something that we can allow PIMCO to invest in on the investment grade side today. That's something we can talk to them about. That would be our second recommendation, is to bring PIMCO in, and based upon our due diligence review and our morning spent with them, for them to educate us on other opportunities to protect oneself in a rising rate environment and to have a more total return type portfolio than our aggregate constricted portfolio. Global Fix, and this is a PIMCO product also, and various hedging strategies through bank loans, as I said, is a way to go also. So, in conclusion, our fixed income portfolio has served us well up to this point. As shown in the last year, it's been challenged, given rates have bottomed out. I like our portfolio. I don't want to change it too much. But from a fine-tuning standpoint, I think it makes sense if the board agrees to give direction to invite both Prima and PIMCO in the next couple of months to do education sessions. Prima on their CMBS investment grade portfolio as a low correlation and higher yielding portfolio to our two existing managers, and PIMCO, an existing manager given their size and breadth of resources and capabilities on maybe some other type of fixed income portfolio that we can consider.
Can you interpret this page for me, 35?
Yes. 35 is?
The last page.
This is how various fixed income sectors perform in various economic environments. Unexpected inflation or rising rates is what we saw in May and June, and obviously cash protects you in that type of environment. Long-dated U.S. Treasuries with a very long duration suffer the most in a sharp rising environment. Investment-grade corporates tend to hold up okay. That's why Dodge and Cox held up okay, given their overweight to corporates. Bank loans hold up better because they have a floating rate component where their yields will go up with the rise in interest rates. And then various other declining rates is kind of the opposite, where long treasuries do the best, and spread products often suffer. Stagflation is a very undesirable type of environment. A Goldilocks economy is strong economic growth, where high yield bonds do well. That's kind of the chart we showed in rising interest rate environments, which generally reflect strong economic growth, that high yield bonds do well. And U.S. dollar debasement is more a currency play, where foreign developed markets and emerging market bonds would do well as the dollar.
You're talking about declining value.
Declining value of the dollar, yep. Exactly. We've had the opposite recently. The dollar's been increasing, actually strong. Yeah.
Well, when you say fear government bonds in these countries, you're talking about national bonds. You're not talking about jurisdictions.
Emerging market bonds are three flavors. One are they're dollar denominated, so they're. You don't have the currency issues there, per se. They're local currency, emerging market local currency, and those are both sovereign or government bonds. And then the third is generally corporate bonds. It's a growing asset class within emerging market bonds. They can both be dollar-denominated or local currency. Most EM debt is dollar-denominated sovereign at this point. Government level.
We don't need a vote, but what's the pleasure of the board? Would you like to see Prima and PIMCO, as Paul suggested?
I would.
PIMCO, for sure. Who was the other one you wanted?
Prima Advisors, I believe it was.
Yes.
We don't deal with them.
No.
No, they would be an outside manager.
It wouldn't hurt to have two of them to listen to.
So how about a short 20 to 30 minute presentation from each one, sometime on the same day?
Okay.
No, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to do this on the same day.
Okay. Right. We will do it in, we'll look at the schedule and pick the lighter of the 2 months. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Paul.
Sure.
Moving on to the executive director. First up is due diligence report.
Just a quick report out on the due diligence report. A couple weeks ago, trustees Garrett, DeMartini, Grover, and myself and Paul went and did our annual due diligence. We visited EFI, actually it's called Chiron now. Chiron/EFI, Chiron. In Oakland, they just moved to Oakland. They merged with Chiron. And we talked about the merge. The merge was essentially due to technologies, synergies of technologies. And we also talked about a few of the issues that Santa Sara faced, mostly GASB issues. And we came up with some game plans on how we're going to attack these GASB issues over the next few months. I was fairly pleased with Chiron and EFI. I think we got the same from the rest of the trustees that day. The next day we went to PIMCO in Newport Beach. As we already found out, they spent most of the day explaining some alternative strategies to our core portfolio. They talked about internal compliance issues and generally where interest rates and inflation may be going in the near term. And again, I think that all the parties involved were pleased with PIMCO as well. And finally, on Wednesday, we went to LSV. That was, I thought, was a very interesting trip to LSV. We got to meet the original owner of LSV, who was an older gentleman, a PhD. You could tell that a pretty smart guy. He talked about his strategy. And then they allowed us into what I would have called the back room, to where we sat with, I would consider him a programmer. In my mind, I sat with a programmer, I can't recall his name, but he actually showed us the stock screening process that they went through to come up with their list of stocks that they would invest in, which I found very, very interesting. And I thought that was a very, I thought LSV was a very first-class organization, and I think the rest of the group here would agree with me.
I'll have a memo for next month summarizing our visits. Okay.
We have a short one here.
Okay.
So if you want to add something, that's fine. But
sure.
And I think the board members got the due diligence books, even
yes,
though they weren't online.
So great. Take a look at this.
Jim, did you want to add anything to that since you were there?
No, it was a whirlwind trip. I'll tell you that. Three different cities in 3 days. It took 9 hours to get to Chicago and back for a 2.5 hour meeting.
So, my life.
PIMCO and LSV were top companies. I was very impressed with them. I'm not sure about the actuarial. You know, I couldn't tell how good they were at all. You know, they moved into plush new office. You know, it makes you wonder, but how much they're charging us for what they do. I don't have an opinion about the actuarial. I just don't know what to think of them, but I thought the investment firms were good.
Do you think the trip was worth it as opposed to the telephone calls?
I do, yeah. As much as I hate traveling, and I tell you, I don't even like driving to Newman and going to Chicago. But when you have somebody that's managing $100 million for you, every once in a while, you need to sit down and visit with them. The visit we had with LSV was especially good because their stock selection, I thought, was fantastic with the strategy they had of analyzing the stocks. And believe me, I'd rather not go. I mean, I'd rather stay home and shovel manure than have
really?
To go to Chicago. But I think it's necessary on our part to visit these managers every once in a while. I can tell you, I don't like it. I think it's the thing that we have to do.
Well, we could have arranged something. I think they still have some stockyards in Chicago for you, Jim.
Make
something.
You feel at home.
Remember last year we went to Rhode Island. And
yes.
Yeah, we did
some other
four
I never
states.
Even knew where Rhode Island was.
Four states and four states in 3 days last August. So it was another whirlwind trip. I would echo what Jim said. I think you get a real insight from a humanistic perspective sitting down and actually meeting with these people in their offices and finding out what they're doing and what they plan to do in the future. So you just get so much more out of it than just sitting there from a static phone call standpoint. So, I mean, yeah, it's very tiring, but you know, it's well worth it. So...
Yeah, they're managing a lot of money.
Yes, Why did it have to be done in 3 days?
I think that was what the due diligence committee decided to do. I think we wanted to get it done. Last year we stretched it out because we had to go back to San Francisco a week or two later, and I think we just wanted to get it done.
It's hard. I mean, board members have their own schedules.
My brain doesn't work very good when I'm tired.
Well, I don't think we're, it's busy. I don't know if it's real tiring. Yeah. It's just that you're busy, and I think, you know, Paul's got his schedule, and each of us have our schedules, and so if you're going to schedule something, you just, you know, 3 days in a row, get it done and come home. I mean, it is a whirlwind trip, but we still get a lot accomplished.
We came into Chicago at night, and the next morning we had the meeting with LSV, and as soon as we got out of there, we were headed for the airport. I was going to stop by the mayor's office and vote, but I never even had time. He's got a voting machine in his office.
The weather was not pleasant in Chicago either, by the way.
It's a little sticky.
The worst I've ever seen there.
Yeah.
Hot.
Humid. What it was. It's humid.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick.
We've gotten a taste of that the last couple of days.
Don, looks like you're up with the legislative update.
On most months, we've just given you a verbal update on legislative updates. This time, it was a little more extensive, so we decided to dig deeper now. This is SB 13, which we have talked about before in the past. This is the cleanup legislation for PEPRA. And things are, it continues to move along. And most of it has remained pretty much as it originally started. There's been one big change that was new to us, and so we wanted to be sure and point this part out, and that would be that the so this bill, it clarifies that the system shall adjust the maximum pensionable compensation level that can be used to calculate the defined benefit based on the annual changes to the consumer price index calculated by dividing the CPI for the month of September in the calendar year preceding the adjustment by the CPI for the month of September the previous year, and then rounding. So before, I think a lot of us were under the impression that we would just use whatever the Social Security amount changes to each year. But now we realize that it's a little more complicated than that. It's actually gonna be based on CPI. And so it's a calculation that will have to be done each year to establish the maximum that can be used. But fortunately, they've given us the time period to use.
The CPI they use is the Bay Area.
That's what we use. And that's the issue here, is that SB 13 has given us guidance in terms of when to do the calculations, but they still haven't said, and they're not going to say, what version of the CPI to use. And we're going to bring an item back to the board in a couple months that suggests that we use the one we use for calculating the COLA increase each year, which is the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose.
Social Security may change CPI, which would be real interesting.
Yeah, that's a complicated formula. I've seen that.
So that was the one area that we wanted to make sure that you knew that was a fairly large change from what we originally interpreted.
So what's it mean?
And the
it just means that we thought that it was going to be nice and clean cut, that across the state of California, everybody would be using the maximum because we would use exactly what Social Security does. And now it's not. And different counties within the state could also be using different levels as the maximum because they may be using a different CPI than we are.
There are, what, so about five different CPIs out there.
Mm-hmm. But what is, define the pensionable compensation then? I mean,
yeah, it seems to me like every year you gotta recalculate everyone.
You do. You calculate the maximum or the ceiling to the pensionable compensation that can be used to calculate one's pension benefit. Right now it's $113,700, and that will increase each year. So anybody who reaches that cap in the year that they retire, they won't be able to get a pension based on a salary anywhere above that amount.
But it doesn't mean we have to go back and recalculate people who are already retired. This is looking at what could be used for those that are going to retire.
This is new tier six PEPRA members too. This won't even be a factor.
Yeah, it's not going to be an issue for us for a while probably.
But we have to know what it is because we have to know when to stop taking contributions on active member salary when they do hit that cap.
So every year you'll be adjusting your contribution.
Right.
Exactly. Which is going to be a little more complex for the employers as well, because we thought it was going to be the same as Social Security, and their systems could be easily accommodate them and just stop ours at the same time as Social Security, and now that's not going to be the case.
So the change from employee to members, is that to accommodate people coming back?
Yes, I believe so. The reciprocity issue,
yeah.
When they called them members in the beginning.
Right.
I mean,
no
employees in the beginning, but an employee may be a returning member,
right.
So that's why they changed the language in that portion, we believe.
One thing that's kind of interesting, too, this also gives us the ability to only calculate one employee contribution rate for everybody. At first, that was a question, and we had ran it past the actuaries and the attorneys, and they said, well, go ahead and do it. But they've actually clarified that we can do that now. And actually, it gives the system the ability to do what they want. They can either do this employee rate by entry age, which is what we have for current members, or they can set a flat rate for all the members going forward. So it gives you the choice.
And so it was nice to see a lot of this, a lot of things that they had been told at meetings before was the legislative intent and that type of thing. It's a lot of those things have now been added in here and are made much more clear, especially like the very last one that it repeals the issue regarding safety, service-connected disabilities, where it originally said that in addition to the benefit, they would also receive an annuity. And right off the bat, they told us that that would be removed. And so now it is very clearly in there that they're going to go ahead and repeal that whole section. We're back to normal on the disabilities.
And when is it going to be? Is it scheduled to be heard in appropriations?
That's a good question. I think it's in appropriations, isn't it?
It's there. But
yeah,
I don't know when it's scheduled to be heard.
You don't have it.
I'm sorry. I had a question the last couple of days. The day I wrote it, it wasn't yet. But.
I meant to look it up this afternoon, and I just forgot. I just didn't go on to it.
The rule of 50% there in the middle of the second page.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that supposed to kick in at the time certain things were negotiated? This on new members goes in immediately?
The way I read this, I don't think this changes anything. This was always my thought, is that the new members would have to pay 50% of the normal cost unless there was an agreement in place that required their bargaining group to pay more. And that's kind of what this says here. So I don't see in my mind.
So a new member coming in right now then has to pay the 50%.
Or more, believe it or not.
Or more.
Right.
But that a result of the suits that are, aren't there some lawsuits over that going on or some?
There is. There's some vested rights issues. But the vested rights issues that are going on shouldn't have any effect on this thing here, because vested right, this is making the members actually pay more than what they would have otherwise. So I don't think anybody would argue that there's any vested rights issues being violated here.
No, but what you're going to have is the new member paying more than the current members who are under contract.
Exactly, for a lesser benefit.
Yeah.
Well, they're paying the same for a lesser benefit.
Yeah. Well, actually, depending on where they are, if the new current members are less than 50%, are going to move up to 50% when the contract expires. These people would be paying more for a lesser benefit.
Exactly.
Okay. We do have one item in Section 8 for closed session, and that means that Joan will be recusing herself. So we're going to take members' forum item 9 out of order. So, Gordon, do you have anything?
We've got final contracts now on Raven, Medley, and White Oak.
Kelly, correct.
We did that through the negotiation stuff in closed session. And as I understand it, we're bringing the contracts back to open session at some point?
That's the first I've heard of this.
The whole concept when we went into closed session, talk about these things, was it be in closed session and then something would be brought to open session?
Well, the reason that we took these to closed session is because there were some items that we wanted to perhaps change, and they may entail some negotiations, and we didn't want those negotiation points being leaked out.
Right, but then when it was completed, it was going to be brought back to open session, since most investment decisions
well,
done
the motion that was made when we came out of closed session was to give the authority for Paul and I to sign off on these, given the changes that were suggested in closed session, if the investment managers agreed to them. And that's exactly what happened here.
So what I think what you're talking about is that once all three agreements have been signed and have been executed by both parties, then if they are subject to a Public Records Act request, and they are. But there was never any discussion that they would be brought back to discussion in open session. It's just whether or not they would become public documents once all three were negotiated and entered into.
Let me change it then to the statement that the board gave authority for you to make changes and negotiate to the best ability the final. Can we bring the final back to the board?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You want all copies of these?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
So before we finalize.
Definitely.
All right. Fred, do you have anything?
No.
Pass. Joan? Pass?
I have nothing.
Paul?
Nope.
One last chance. Donna?
Nothing.
Nothing. Maria?
Nothing.
Mike?
Nope.
Don? Kelly?
Nothing.
Rick?
I have nothing.
At hold on a minute. I'm bringing this on your behalf, so hold on a minute. So at our strategic planning meeting last week, Joan Clendenin brought up about trustee education, and I talked to Rick afterwards, and he asked me if I would bring this in. This is a book of it's entitled Barron's Financial Guide: Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. This is a very good book. Sackers used to give these out free at the new trustees breakout training session, but I think in the last year or two the price has gone up and they haven't provided these. There used to be a stack of them, and that's how I ended up with one. So Rick is going to order some of these, not only for staff but for trustees. So that's what we're going to do.
Gordon, yeah. That's what you loaned me.
Yeah.
After we were in Phoenix last year, I mean, I came back with a jumble of terms and phrases that I were all new to me. And Gordon loaned me that book. And I studied it for a while. But it would be nice
you
to
didn't
have
memorize
one.
It?
You practically need a glossary to read.
Well, you're going to have your own copy.
Thank
so,
you.
All right. And staff and other trustees as well. So,
all right. Good day, folks.
All right.
I have one thing I forgot.
Have fun. Okay.
Are they having that conference in Phoenix again?
As far as I know.
Is that an approved?
Yes. Okay, we'll get you the details.
Do they have a e-reader version?
E-reader version? I don't
know. No. Hard copy only.
They have it in Braille.
Yeah.
Hey, it's never too soon.
Okay. So we'll now move into closed session. So someone want to entertain a motion to
go into closed session.
Okay, we have a motion by Donna Riley and a second by Maria to move into closed session. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are now in closed session. Bye, Doris. Bye, Stan. Bye, everybody.